Hello, this is Joe Cordell of Cordell & Cordell.
Tell me if this describes you. You're a man who's worked hard all your life. You have a nice house, a savings, a good retirement. But there's just one problem. Your wife has told you she wants out. She says she wants a divorce. Suddenly, everything you've worked so hard for is on the table. You need a partner you can count on. Consider Cordell & Cordell.
Contact Cordell & Cordell online at CordellCordell.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with you until 12 o'clock. If you'd like to be a part of the program, you can do so. Winning streak listener line, 855-282-8255. Lion's Choice text line, that same number, 855-282-8255. If you're looking for a car, why not Bomarito? They sponsor the Bomarito 500 coming up August 26th at Gateway Motorsports Park. We had a Channel 5 employee that just bought that Mazda C5. It is one spectacular-looking sport utility vehicle. If you are interested in a car, you can email me at fcusimano@ksdk.com. I'll have a salesman call you within 24 hours, and if you buy the car, you're going to Key Malls. Bomarito, there's a reason. They sell the most cars in the state of Missouri now for 8 straight years. They do it better than anybody. Go to bomarito.com for more information. All right, we have a couple of good texts right off the bat. Oh, somebody bring up some of the Celtics six man. Yeah, Don Nelson was great off the bench for 5 NBA titles. And then we got to remember that Bill Walton was the six man for the Celtics when they won a world championship. And in fact, on that team, it has to be the only front line where all 4 players that played significant minutes all went to the Hall of Fame. Bird at the small forward, McHale started at that time, Parrish at the center, and then Walton off the bench. So the sixth man role in Boston is cherished. The original one was Frank Ramsey, and yes, he is in the Hall of Fame. So just think about this. Six men who were in the Hall of Fame for the Boston Celtics. Walton, Ramsey, McHale, and Nelson's in the Hall of Fame. And then, let's see, who am I missing? Havlicek. That's 5 sixth men who are in the Hall of Fame. That is absolutely stunning. So Jason Tatum may have an unbelievable role there. Unless they play him at the 2 and they play Gordon Hayward at the 3. I don't think it's going to be very interesting to see what they do with Bradley or maybe Marcus Smart. They're going to probably have to move one of those guys to fit Hayward's salary in Boston. So that'll be fun to watch. This NBA is, in terms of St. Louis interest, when you have Brad Beal, and yet, well, Lee is still there, and now what we're seeing from Jason Tatum, the league is going to be fun for St. Louis to watch. And, of course, Ben McLemore, the pride of Wellston, and Patrick McCall, the pride of Wellston also. Frank, so happy that Darren Pang will be back to call Blues games with John Kelly for another 3 years. From Donald Trump's Russian friend. Yeah, that was great to hear, too. I think Dan Caesar wrote a piece on Friday saying that there was a little bit of angst, a little bit of drama, whether Darren Pang would come back. And sometimes I think that when those articles pop out and all of a sudden the public is aware and there's the possibility of Darren Pang not being a part of the broadcast, well, do we have Darren ready? What do you have, Brian? Oh, Derek's ready. Okay, gotcha. All right. I think sometimes we get concerned that we were going to lose Darren Pang, and I imagine Fox Sports Midwest agreed that there's no way we could. I mean, Darren Pang is a vital element to Blues broadcast, and I'm glad he's coming back. A vital element to Cardinal coverage is Derek Gould, and he joins us now. Derek, good to be with you. How are you?
I'm all right, Frank, and yourself?
Very good. About a month ago, when we were talking about Lance Lynn, you told us, that, and I think you nailed it, that if you're going to have a contract with Lance Lynn as a free agent, it's going to start with a one. And then he's gone through this stretch where he just does not get into the sixth inning.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see this now? I mean, we got a half a season for him to still earn that magnificent contract. What do you see right now with Lance Lynn moving forward, who was great for five innings yesterday?
He's going through the rather predictable phase of a guy coming back from Tommy John, where there's whatever you want to call it, dead arm, where there's just not a feel for the life on the arm. There's just, you know, it just kind of sags a bit. The stuff, I guess, what would it be, the durability deep into a game just kind of, you know, fades, and it'll bounce back. But it's not unusual. You think back to probably most memorably was Adam Wainwright, right? Come back from Tommy John, and he had a similar thing, just kind of a month or a month and a half where it just was a grind because the arm strength wasn't what he expected. You know, the innings start to pack on, and you just kind of have this moment. You see it for a brief while in spring training, sometimes for every pitcher, but certainly the guys coming back from Tommy John, and then you see it for a stretch during the season, and then they recover and move on.
So I see how why they're making this move at first base and second base because of Voit, but it is kind of interesting how bizarre it is that they'd move Matt Carpenter out of the position to get Luke Voit into the lineup, but wouldn't do that with Matt Adams in April and May.
Right. Well, there's a big reason for
Colton
that,
Wong,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Colton Wong was there.
But it is kind of interesting now that they've moved Matt. I mean, they have to because Wong's not there. Give me your take on what you're...
Well, would you have moved Matt Carpenter there when Colton Wong
was
the second best player on the team?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
What do you like about Voit, and how do you think the Cardinals are viewing him, both short-term and long-term? Or is it too early?
I like that when Voit makes contact, it's hard. You know, I mean, there haven't been many times where he's been, you know, I guess they say cheated there, but I mean, he puts the ball in play and it's rifled somewhere. You know, he's a guy he said his job is to hit bombs and doubles. I mean, even some of his ground balls have been hard. I like that. He shows that he can make contact at a variety of pitch. I think opponents are still trying to figure him out a little bit. So we'll see an adjustment, especially within the division, especially after the All-Star break. And, you know, if they start feeding him a lot of off-speed pitches to see if they can pull him off balance, that'll be something. But, you know, long-term, I think the Cardinals are trying to figure that out too, Frank. You know, this is a guy who cannot be said enough. He has forced his way into the conversation. He's not a guy who came up as a top prospect. He's not a guy who the Cardinals internally saw as a top prospect. He's not a guy who, you know, gets rave reviews of like some of his peers, some of the guys who he's just flat out produced. And that's what he's had to do, is he has just had to flat out produce everybody, because he's not going to have the high draft pick. He's not going to have the high ceiling or the perception of the high ceiling. He's not going to have anything given to him. You know, he's not going to have the latitude to struggle, or the patience that some of the guys with higher hype would have gotten. And that's a credit to him that he has just smashed through and made his way here. So I think they're not quite sure what to make of him as far as what his future goes, because as long as he hits, then, you know, he's part of the present, and that's kind of what matters most.
I think you do your own rankings of Cardinal prospects. You do that, correct?
With help of Baseball America, yeah.
Okay.
Baseball America,
did you have him, like, at the start of spring training in your top 20?
He was not, no.
Hmm. So I guess this 22nd round pick has kind of hit at each level, correct?
He has, yeah.
Hmm. Derek Gould joins us. This is
you want to know some background to that?
Yeah.
Or, do you wonder about it?
Yeah, he does have a history, though. He's hit at every level, correct?
He has. He's also been, you know, a touch older. That's one of the things that they like to take into factor, right? He's 26 now, I think. He was a year old or 2 years older than the average age at the league that he was at. You know, so that's a little different than you know, his comparisons are like, you know, Matt Adams. Matt Adams was at the same level younger doing that damage, and that matters. I mean, we can argue how much it should matter, and I'm not I think production is production, and, you know, that has to carry a lot of weight. But when you're talking about ranking prospects, in fact, we were just having this discussion. I was just having this discussion with an editor at Baseball America just a few minutes ago, just trying to sort out, like, okay, some mid-season stuff and how would the rankings look now. And, you know, at some point in time, like, his point was you do have to look to the future. Like, 3 years from now, who's going to be the better player, right? I mean, is it Delvin Perez? Is it Harrison Bader? You know, I mean, 3 years from now, who's the impact guy? And that has to factor into these rankings. It's not just today and now, though I think sometimes we do just kind of we discount production too much. Just like we, you know, at the major league level, we dream on the fact that the guy's going to get up and fail, or the fact that a guy hasn't failed. Like Bader's another example. There's, you know, I won't go a day without getting an email, why isn't Harrison Bader, especially yesterday, you know, the outfield was a bunch of windmills and they all strike out. And, you know, I'll get emails today, I have already, why isn't Harrison Bader up here? Well, Harrison Bader hasn't failed yet. You know, that's one of the reasons why he's not here. But that's also one of the reasons why they, you know, fans are so clamoring for him. I think the other side is true. A guy like Voit, you know, you just look at the production, and maybe more emphasis needs to be put on that.
Another one of those 3 years from now questions. 3 years from now, who do you think is going to have more at-bats as a Cardinal, Paul DeJong or Aledmys Diaz?
That's a great question. You mean in that season or in their career?
Yeah, in their careers.
Oh, boy. That's a really good question, Frank. I honestly don't know. I don't know. Paul DeJong has been very impressive. I've been high on him. You know, he's a guy who I have ranked high and argued for, because especially as his versatility. In fact, again, just a few minutes ago, I was arguing for him to be ranked rather high with Baseball America, just because you have you have a guy who hits for power. He could be more consistent up there, but he's got a live bat. And what he's shown in the field is has broadened his ability and where he can play, and he's done so quite well. I think he's been excellent at second base, and I think he's surprised at shortstop. I know that he's surprised other teams with his ability to play in the infield, in the middle infield, and that's something that is going to carry. I think we're going to learn a lot about where Diaz fits. Certainly in the next coming weeks. I find it interesting that the team demotes him, and all he's doing down there is playing shortstop. I think that's kind of telling that they at least think that he'll come back at that position, and that this is sort of the rinse cycle that Grichuk and Wong have also gone through in their careers, with the expectation that he'll return in the same position in which he left. So it's a great question, Frank. I wish I had a better answer, but I'm not. I mean, what would be your answer?
I think I'd lean towards DeJong. Of course, he doesn't walk. It's interesting, neither of them walk.
No, they're both contact guys.
Yeah. Let's move to another player.
Diaz doesn't strike out all that much, though. Keep that in mind.
That's true. Is Stephen Piscotty, after the big contract, sitting there with just 6 home runs and 29 RBIs, I'm wondering, do you think anybody in the organization is saying, you know what, this guy is going through a personal hell with his mother having to deal with this, and that maybe we should be patient, and I don't know, I'm not going to say give him a mulligan, but boy, let's understand what this young man is going through.
Do I think anybody's saying that?
Yeah.
I'm sure they're saying that. Yeah, I mean, what doesn't compute is they're saying that, and they understand that, and then they bat him third.
So you would definitely lower him in the order.
Message it sends, right? I mean, like, Stephen Piscotty has struggled in the outfield, and we've talked to him about that. He searched for himself at the plate with his swing, and he's been rather candid about that. Aledmys Diaz has struggled in the field and has been candid about that, but put in a lot of work, and just like Piscotty has seen improvements over the last stretch until Piscotty has continued to improve and has brought himself back into being one of the better fielders in the game.
Wait a minute, Derek. We've lost you there. Come on back. Come on back. Let's rehook up with Derek. I will give you Piscotty's numbers. They're not horrendous, but you know, because his on base percentage is not bad. He always draws walks, but he's only hitting 250. His OBP is 366. The slugging is disappointing at 402. You just expected that, you know, in year three, that his numbers would be up. Derek, go ahead and continue your thoughts, please.
Yeah, sorry about that, Frank. I mean, I just think that, you know, it's interesting that you have these guys who have some parallels, right? While Piscotty is on the upswing defensively and back in that good group, and Diaz struggled defensively this fact, they haven't been offensively either what they imagined or what the team imagined. And one of them is batting third, and the other one is in AAA. And it's just kind of it's just incongruous, right? And that also fits with what you're talking about. Everybody needs to recognize. I think everybody does recognize that he has had, you know, stuff off the field that has preoccupied his mind. You know, caring for and thinking about his mother is absolutely foremost on his mind, and no one would fault him for that. But is it unfair then to lop him in the middle of the lineup and then put him in these spots like he was in constantly? Yesterday, for this lineup to work, it, you know, it starts with Matt Carpenter and Dexter Fowler, but they get on base. The guy who gets them in is the number three and number four hitter. And yesterday, Jerko wasn't available, and Piscotty was the number three hitter. I mean, it continues to underscore the kind of guy that they need to get at the deadline, or the kind of guy they need to look for the future as well.
Speaking of the deadline, John Morosi echoed your thoughts from earlier in the season that the Cardinals are interested in Josh Donaldson.
Now,
Does Donaldson's recent tailspin, 8 for his last 62, 0 home runs since June 14th, affect their interest in him at all?
I mean, it affects it in the sense that it does create a situation where maybe you can make a play for him, but I don't think it totally changes the view of him. There's some sense with him that the situation, the constant pounding, you know, the change of scenery, all those things could play into having him be Josh Donaldson that you're familiar with, and not the guy who's in a, you know, who's struggled here of late. So I mean, if it affects it, it might affect it in a sense that, all right, well, Maybe they're more eager to move him, or it certainly contributed to Toronto not playing all that well, which puts him in the seller category. Whereas before, you know, they might have they had that one blip, that one stretch where it was like, all right, well, maybe they'll play their way out of that. You know, the sense is still that the Blue Jays want to make some changes. His contract is significant for next year. He's arbitration eligible, and we've already seen sort of what an MVP caliber player is going to command for a one-year salary. That's something that the Cardinals can stomach. Some other teams cannot. Certainly they can with their broadcast deal coming on and the room that they have on their payroll. And just to be blunt, their need for that kind of player. You know, that's what makes him attractive to the Cardinals and always has. That's why, you know, we talked about it a while ago, long before the same report was coming out nationally.
And the interesting thing is that he plays the one position where the Cardinals are really good at. I mean, their best player is their third baseman. Now, granted,
right,
you can move that guy, but it is that's not a great thing.
I mean, I don't. Why is it a bad thing?
Well, that's definitely his best position, Jerko's best position. Would you agree?
Defensively, absolutely.
Yeah.
But that's not the only position he can play. And that's all. I mean, I gotta imagine that's not the only position Josh Donaldson could play, right? I mean,
yep.
If you asked him to play first base, I'm pretty sure he'd do okay.
Let's move to Tommy Pham. Derek, let's just say he projects out and continues the rest of the season like he's played. He ends up with 20 homers, 20 stolen bases, and
cool,
maybe a 390 on base, hitting about 290.
390 on base, that's an $80 million man.
Well, he's 381 right now. Do they go into this offseason saying the penciling him in at one of those three spots, or will he have to battle with multiple other players for the spot?
I mean, that's a fascinating thing, because if he produces like that, then that would be the kind of guy that they would go off and offer more than $80 million to, because he had 20 home runs, 20 steals, 390 on base. Isn't that the guy they just got?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's, you know, I don't know. I think there's going to be, and he's even like the same age, right?
He is.
So, wow. I think there would still be some kind of hesitance about two things. I mean, his injury history is a factor here, right? I mean, that does have to color a lot of the decisions with him and influence them. I mean, he's a guy who seems to have overcome, you know, and gotten past the shoulder stuff. And you think back a few years, it was the quad or the leg injury that he had. You know, he's a guy who plays at a certain RPM and sometimes puts himself in danger of an injury. And then he is constantly vigilant with his eyes, and he deserves a lot of credit for that. But any team is going to have to take that into account, whether that's the Cardinals or another team. I don't know. I mean, I'll say this. He is the one guy who's playing exactly like the Cardinals wanted to be at the start of this season. You know, when you think about the words that Mozeliak used to describe the team he had in mind, whether it was signing Fowler or whether it was letting Wong loose, a lot of the words that he used to describe this team really fit Tommy Pham. You know, athletic, speed, first to third. You know, the threat of power, if not always the connection of power, you know, strong defense. I mean, he's been the team's best center fielder this year. I mean, you look at some of the defensive metrics, what he's done for the team in center field and what DeJong has done at shortstop has brought stability to those two positions that were minus positions, just a few weeks ago. So, it's tough to say that they would suddenly commit a position to him, because they have just the complications of well, is Fowler the center fielder next year? Just like next year is Fowler the leadoff hitter? I mean, it's all of a sudden their biggest free agent signing now has other guys doing the jobs that he was signed to do. It's a really odd roster situation they've got themselves in.
Everybody talking about buying and selling as we get closer to the deadline. The Cardinals really cannot be sellers, can they, if they're 4.5 games out, if they're this close?
No. They cannot be.
So what do you think? Will they be buyers?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't changed my thought on that at all. I mean, you know, they're not just in a position where you know, they can be buyers for 2017. They can see if they can take advantage of this market for 2018 too, because if they don't make a move, you know, then they're just delaying their need for a bat. That doesn't end it. You know, it's not the bat they need isn't going to arrive as a surprise, you know, and if they look at this market as a chance to add that guy, and sometimes a trade deadline is a place to make a move like that for a guy who you can have control over the next year, because the sellers are clear, the buyers are clear, unlike the winter when the buyers are everywhere. And, you know, and here you have maybe a window to make a move for a guy like that. So, yeah, they go into this July, you know, as a wanting to be a contender for 2017, but aware that they might be a buyer for 2018. That's sound strategy. Now, it doesn't mean it's going to work, but that's sound strategy at this time of year, especially when the need is so apparent.
Does Justin Verlander end up in Chicago?
I don't know.
Who else is Sonny Gray? Who are the ideal candidates to end up in Chicago, do you believe?
Well, you have Sonny Gray would be one. Vargas would be down the list, but a guy who would appeal to them because of what they need. You have Quintana is still a guy who has interested the Cubs. You could look to Tampa Bay, what Tampa Bay is going to be. I don't know. I know in the past, you got like a Chris Archer there, you know, that they have talked about moving. Would this be the time to do that? I don't know. That's a little tougher to say, but you know, they're this market is not hurting for available starting pitching. It's abundant, and it could come from places that you maybe you don't expect, like an entirely a losing team. I mean, you also have Yu Darvish. Yu Darvish would be an interesting ad for the Cubs, and that would make a lot of sense as well. So you see that there's a lot of names out there for a reason, because many of them are actually available. It's going to be a question of timing for the Cubs and number too. If they think they want to go after two guys, then they may aim high for the first one and then go after sort of a quality start kind of guy who maybe will give you a 4.5 ERA, 4.75 ERA, but at least give you some stability and a known quantity, which is really what they're missing most of all, is the guy who, you know, just every 5 days is going to give them at least six innings so that they can kind of build around that and have some stability.
One final thought before we let you go. Give me your gut feel on Michael Gersh. What makes him tick? Why could he be good at this?
What makes him tick?
Yeah, what do you know about him?
I've known him for a long time, and I think as a lot of people have around the Cardinals, he was he wanted to chase his dream of being in baseball, and went to a lot of creative lengths and a lot of commitment from his family to make that happen. His wife willing to move down here with their kids on just the hope of him possibly being involved in baseball says a lot. He's in a lot of ways, I think a lot of what the Cardinals have done over the last 10, 12, 14 years when it comes to analytics and when it becomes to becoming more of a data-driven team, one that is very conscious and very proud of its algorithms when it comes to evaluating players, both amateur and in the majors, a lot of that stems from work that, Gersh had a direct hand in. He was the guy who was put in charge of first putting together the analytics team that they have. That was his purview. One of the things that the Cardinals did, and to be blunt, one of the things that some of the Cardinals were frustrated that maybe Houston borrowed from, which you saw in the hacking scandal was a motivation there, was something Gersh developed. So when Chris Correa went in and looked at the stuff, he was in part looking to see if Houston borrowed from the Cardinals, and that model was a thing that Gersh brought to the team and helped perfect with the intelligence and work of an entire staff. When Mo was making some major decisions, be it the next manager or re-signing Albert Pujols or chasing after Carlos Beltran or chasing after Dexter Fowler, his lieutenant, the guy who stayed in the room consistently, who he turned to for advice and for data and for strategy, was Gersh. So I think while we see, Frank, a lot of people rushing to give Luno credit for the draft or Mozeliak credit for some of these moves, and they were in charge of those things for sure, it takes more of a village to put it together, and one of the guys who was a leading voice from that village was Gersh, whether the fans heard him or not.
Good stuff. Derek, we will talk next week. I'll see you at the ballpark today. Thanks so much for your time, sir.
All right. Look forward to it, Frank. Thanks.
All right. Derek Gould, Post-Dispatch, joining us. Hey, during the month of July, you can save thousands on a new inventory home with McBride & Son Homes. Red, white, and move sale. McBride & Son Homes has over 100 inventory homes ready for a quicker move-in. And with nearly 40 communities across the metro St. Louis area, there are homes for every price point in every part of town, so there's no reason to wait. The McBride & Son Homes Red, White, and Move Sale. Save thousands of dollars on a new inventory home today. Pricing on these homes range from the mid-100s to over $1 million. Visit McBrideHomes.com for more details. Got a couple of minutes before we go to break. Guys, jumping out at from that interview, what moves the needle there for you guys?
The continued search for a middle-of-the-order bat. was interesting just because you saw yesterday, I mean, it wasn't so much the middle of the order, but like 2 and 3, Pham and Piscotty struggled. Carpenter reached base 3 times and didn't score.
Hey, and you know what? It adds credence to the Rick Hummel thought that when Lance Lynn is pitching, then you bat him 8th and you bat an actual offensive player that Carpenter could drive in 9th.
There we go. Exactly. Yeah, that does lead to that's a good idea.
Boy, a lot of was made, by the way. I think you were in the locker room after the game, right, yesterday?
Not yesterday, okay. Saturday.
Everybody's talking
Luke
about
Voigt
Lance
Day.
Lynn hitting left-handed yesterday for the first time. It's a big deal. He's not,
what's the difference?
Yeah,
it's, I don't really think it matters.
He'll ground out to the right side instead of the left side.
Exactly.
What's interesting to me about that conversation you had with Derek is when you asked him about Tommy Pham, if you look at those numbers, like the numbers you said for Tommy Pham are what he's on pace to do. It's not like that would be a major uptick in his production. If Tommy Pham continues doing what he's done so far this season, then that he ends up with 20 home runs. He ends up with those stolen base numbers. And I think it's fair to ask and say, you know, when you went out and signed Dexter Fowler, you paid him all that money to be, yeah, the guy that Tommy Pham is kind of being right now. It's kind of maybe frustrating from the Cardinals' perspective, but I think it's worth asking. They've got to try to make the right decision on Pham. Is he a guy that you sell high on right now because he's producing and you don't think he will for the long term? Or is he somebody who might be able to keep this up and you make the decision to give him that spot? I think that's a really interesting dynamic.
Yeah, there are worse things in the world than having Tommy Pham as your everyday outfielder with 20 homers, 20 stolen bases, a .390 on base, and playing really good defense.
And he's free.
Yeah.
You're not paying him Dexter Fowler money or money that you'd have to allot to another free agent to bring that guy in. He's basically free giving you that production right now. I mean, it's one of the guys that has kept the Cardinals even in the Central.
All right, let's take a short timeout. When we come back, we're going to talk with one of the best pitchers to ever come from this area, Kirk Reeder. This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan.